Two photos pop up simultaneously. Garrett and Logan have both sent me pics of pink dildos. I'm even more confused now. Dean messages immediately with, "Why do you guys have dildo pics handy?" Logan, A-L-I-N-I-M-B. Dean, ? Me, ? Garrett, "At least it's not in my butt." I snort to myself because I'm starting to piece it together. Logan, "Nice, G, you got that on the first try." Garrett, "We spent too much time together." Me, "Please tell me you caught D playing with dildos." Logan, "Sure did." Dean is quick to object again. "I had a girl over." The guys and I rag on him for a couple more minutes, but I have to stop when Fitzy stumbles into the bathroom and shoves me aside. He's got crazy bedhead, and he's buck naked.
"Gotta piss," he mumbles.
"Morning, sunshine," I say cheerfully. "Want me to make you some coffee?"
"God, yes, please."
Chuckling, I duck out of the bathroom and walk the four or so steps into his kitchenette. When he finally emerges, I shove a cup of coffee in his hand, sip my own, and say, "Dean shoved a dildo up his ass last night." Fitzy nods.
"Makes sense."
I snicker mid-sip. Coffee spills over the rim of my cup.
"It really does, huh?"
He gives another nod and chugs the rest of his coffee. I'm already dressed and ready to go, so I leisurely finish my drink while Fitzy dashes around the apartment in search of some clothes. 5 minutes later, we step outside into the early morning chill and head off to our respective cars. Luckily, I've got my gear in the back, so I don't have to stop at the house first. And although it's stupid as fuck, Fitz and I race to campus like a bunch of speed demons. He wins because my truck is old and slower than molasses. We make it to the arena with 10 minutes to spare, which is good because my phone chooses that moment to ring. My pulse quickens at the thought that it might be Sabrina. It's not. I'm slightly disappointed when I see Mom's number, and then feel bad about it because I love my mom. "I'll see you in there," I call out to Fitzy, who's hopping out of his car. He nods and ambles off while I answer the call. "Hey, Mom, practice is about to start, so I don't have a lot of time."
"Oh, I won't keep you then. I was just calling to check in and say hi."
Her familiar voice causes something inside of me to soften. I swear, Mom always has that effect on me. I could be tense as shit, and one word from her loosens all my muscles. I guess I'm a mama's boy, but it's not like I could be anything else, seeing as how I don't have a dad. "You're up early?" I remark. It's only 5 o'clock in Texas, which is early even for her.
"Couldn't sleep," she admits. "I'm styling an entire bridal party this morning. I'm nervous."
"Ah, there's nothing to be nervous about. You're the hair whisperer, remember?" Mom laughs.
"That I am. But makeup, not so much. Those courses I took last summer helped, but geez, kiddo, I'm freaking out here. How could I ever live with myself if I was the woman who ruined a bride's big day by painting her face like a clown?"
"You'll do fine," I assure her. "I guarantee it."
"Oh, a guarantee? Not even a simple old promise? You've got a lot of confidence in your mama, John."
"Of course I do, because my mama's a rock star."
"I really raised a charmer, huh?"
"Yep." I grin as I balance the phone on my shoulder and slide out of the pickup.
"Okay, give me a quick rundown of what you've been up to," she orders.
I make my way to the massive front steps of Breyer's hockey facility. "Not much," I confess. "Hockey, school, friends, the usual."
"Still no girlfriend?"
There's a teasing note in her voice. "Nope," I hesitate. "I did meet someone, though."
"Oh, tell me everything."
Laughing, I reach into my pocket for my student ID to unlock the front doors. Security is tight here. "Nothing to tell yet, but when I've got more details, you'll be the first to know. Anyway, I gotta go walking into the rink."
"All right. Call me when you got more time to chat. Love you, baby."
"Love you, too." I hang up and swipe my ID in the keypad, then barrel into the sleek, air-conditioned lobby where framed jerseys hang on the walls and colorful championship pennants stream down from the ceiling. I wish I'd had more time to talk to Mom. But when it comes to Briar hockey, there's no such thing as slacking. Coach Jensen runs a top-notch program that prides itself on excellence and hard work. Just because we're sucking balls these days doesn't mean those fundamentals have been lost. In a brisk stride, I head for the locker rooms. I still have my phone in hand, and after a moment of hesitation, I give in to the urge to text Sabrina. Me. Morning, darling. Give any thoughts to what we talked about? I've got a first date offer here with your name written all over it. Then I put my phone away and go to practice.
Sabrina. I'm already late to meet the girls, but when I fly outside after my evening tutorial, I know instantly that I'm about to be even later. Beau Maxwell and a few of his buddies are congregating at the bottom of the steps, surrounded by half a dozen football groupies. From where I'm standing, it's obvious that the boys are enjoying the attention. Although Briar is primarily a hockey college, the football players get plenty of limelight around here, too.
S.
Beau breaks away from the group when he spots me on the steps. His blue eyes light up, which brings ugly scowls to the faces of the girls around him. They clearly don't appreciate my poaching their quarterback slash potential hookup for the night, but I don't particularly care. I haven't spoken to Beau in weeks, and I can't deny that I'm happy to see him. I descend the stairs while he ascends them, and we meet halfway for a hug. Strong, muscular arms wrap around me and swing me right off my feet. I laugh, ignoring the groupies who are murdering me with their eyes. Hey, I say when he sets me back on my feet. Have you been?
Not great, actually. Not great at all. My bed is cold and lonely without you in it.
I can tell he's joking because his pout is exaggerated, and even that silly expression doesn't make him any less handsome. With his dark hair and chiseled features, Beau's sexy as hell. We met at a party last spring where within seconds he sucked me in with his dimpled grin and easygoing charm. I think we fell into bed with each other about 10 minutes after that, and he's one of the rare guys I allowed myself to see more than once. Except now we're standing face to face and he's doing nothing for me. No tingles, no heat, no I want to hit that again. As gorgeous as Beau is, he's not the one I want to be naked with these days. That honor falls to John Tucker, a.k.a. the sweetest, hottest, most patient guy on the planet, a.k.a. the guy who asked me out via text this morning and who I still haven't texted back.
Seriously, baby, what did I do to deserve such punishment?
He clutches his heart with mock pain, and the scowly, fumy groupies get scowlier and fumier. Uh-huh. I'm sure your bed's been miserably empty since I left it. I bet you're living the sad, lonely life of a monk.
Not quite.
He winks.
But you could at least try to act like you miss boning down with all this.
He sweeps a hand in front of him from head to toe. And yeah, all this is mighty appealing. I'm talking big chest, sculpted arms, long legs, and muscles to spare. But Tucker has all those things, too. I see your ego is still as massive as ever, I say cheerfully. Beau nods fervently.
It is. Not as big as my dick, of course.
Of course.
But I'm not complaining.
Other than your big dick and ego, how's life? How's Joanna? I'd met Beau's older sister Joanna at one of his parties, and watching the two of them bicker had been highly entertaining.
She's great. Still doing that show on Broadway and killing it.
He sighs.
She asks about you all the time.
She does?
Oh, yeah. She thinks I'm an idiot for not making you my girlfriend.
Making me? I echo dryly.
I tried to tell her that I'm too much man for you, but Joe insists that you're too much woman for me. She's wrong, obviously.
My lips twitch in humor. Obviously. What else? How's the season going? His laid-back expression falters slightly.
Team's lost 2 games already this season.
Sympathy tugs at my chest. I know how important football is to him. I'm sure you can still turn things around, I assure him, though I have no idea if that's even true. Apparently it's not.
Nah, we're fucked,
he says glumly.
2 losses pretty much guarantees we won't make the playoffs.
Aw, oh, crap. And it's his last year at Briar, too. Hey, but at least you led the team to 1 championship during your time here, I remind him. That counts for something, right?
Sure.
but he doesn't sound convinced of that. He clears his throat and offers a smile that lacks the luster from before. Anyway, I'm glad I ran into you. I promise not to say anything about this, but I figured it's cool to bring it up to you since you're the other party. I wrinkle my forehead. The other party of what? He grins broadly, and this time it does reach his eyes. Tuck's epic pursuit of you? Oh, God. What are you talking about? I squeak. Huh. Don't play dumb, baby. It's been like a week since he tracked me down at the gym, and I know the guy. No way did he go a week without tracking you down. Anxiety pricks my belly. Bo and I might have ended things on fantastic terms, but that doesn't mean I feel comfortable discussing other guys with him. As if he senses that, he softens his tone. It's all good, S. You don't have to give me deets if you don't want to. He shrugs. I just wanted to make sure you knew he was a decent guy. Wait, what? Wait, what? I say aloud. Bo laughs. Tucker, he clarifies, as if I don't know who we're talking about. I know you have this vendetta against hockey players.
I do not, I protest.
You totally fucking do. He's laughing harder now. Do you want me to list all the times I had to sit there and listen to you trash D. Laurentiis? Actually, I wouldn't even be able to list them. That's how often you did it.
There may have been a couple of occasions, I concede with a grumble.
A couple, 100, same diff, right? But yeah, I'm not even going to try to defend Dean, who's fucking awesome, by the way. I know you won't change your mind about him, but Tucker is legit cool. He's one of the nicest dudes I've ever met.
Same, I think, Riley. Out loud, I ask, why are you telling me this?
Because I know you.
He reaches out and tweaks a strand of my hair. Behind us, an outraged gasp sounds from the groupies.
You've probably already thought of a million reasons not to give Tuck a shot. And if one of those reasons is that you're really not into him, then great. Don't go out with him then. But if you are into him, don't let this big brain of yours.
He gently taps my head.
Talk you out of it, okay?
You should probably stop touching me. Your fans are getting upset. He snorts.
You really think me touching you is going to stop one or two of all of them from sucking my dick tonight?
I blanch. Gross, Bo.
Truth, Sabrina.
He waggles his eyebrows.
I'm a god around here. I can do no wrong.
Huh. Must be nice to live in a world where everything gets handed to you on a silver platter, where your mistakes mean nothing. I keep my cynical thoughts to myself. So what exactly did Tucker say to you?
That he's into you.
Bo gives another shrug.
He wanted to know if our history was going to pose a problem for him. I told him no.
My jaw falls open. So he pretty much asked you for permission to date me?
Permission?
Bo snorts loud enough to cause all his buddies to glance over at us.
Yeah, right. More like he announced that he wanted you and that if I had a problem with it, too bad, so sad.
I fight the grin that's trying to surface. For all his sweet words and aw shucks smiles, Tucker really is an alpha fucker. I don't know why that thrills me so much, but it does.
Anyway, don't be stupid about this,
Bo says sternly.
Someone like Tuck might be good for you. He can keep you from studying yourself to death.
Oh, I exclaim. Before I forget, I got into Harvard.
For real?
His face breaks out in the biggest, broadest smile.
Congratulations!
And then he hauls me into his arms again for a bear hug, while his gorgeous groupies glare bloody murder at me. Chapter 12. Sabrina. Hope's Beamer is waiting for me in the parking lot. When I climb into the back seat, I find Hope and Karen singing along to some awful pop song, and I don't feel guilty anymore for making them wait. Clearly, they've been having a great time. So what's this new place we're going to? I ask once the song ends.
You'll see,
Hope chirps from the driver's seat. My friends exchange amused glances, which immediately raises my suspicions. If it's the weird hippie bar you took me to in Boston that served wheatgrass shots, I'm jumping out right now, not even kidding.
You'll like this place,
she assures me. It has all your favorites. I don't need to see their faces to know they're both smirking at me. I'm trusting you, I warn. Don't break the friend code.
Karen turns around. Forget the friend code. What were you and Beau talking about? Leaning forward, I fill them in on the conversation I just had with Breyer's star quarterback. Shit, this boy is serious, Hulp exclaims. Beau or Tucker? Tucker, duh. He spoke to one of your exes and declared his intentions? Girl, this man is all in. That's weird, right? I mean, he's actively pursuing me. It's weird. I direct this mostly toward Karen. Hope's a romantic. She believes that everyone on The Bachelor is actually there to find love, when the rest of the viewing public knows it's all about nobody seeking fame. But Karen disappoints me. It's not weird. It's awesome. I mean, I've had hookups. Met a guy's eyes across the room or struck up a conversation. But I've never had someone pursue me. Same, Hope says, flicking a glance toward me in the rearview mirror. DeAndre asked me out while I was walking on the treadmill. He said he'd never seen a girl look prettier sweaty than me. She sighs dreamily. I said yes immediately. If there was any chase at all, it lasted all 5 minutes. I put out on the second date, remember? How does it feel? Karen stares at me as if I'm some fascinating new discovery she just smeared on a microscope slide. When Hope puts out, well, she's a good kisser, but the rest of her technique needs work. The joke is lame, but I'm not ready to acknowledge that I feel like a giddy kid by Tucker's steady, determined pursuit. Hope holds up her middle finger. I'm an awesome lay. My technique is perfect. If I were any better, DeAndre wouldn't be able to get out of bed. As it is, I have to kick him out. It's true, Karen confirms. DeAndre always begs like a sad child when he has to leave in the morning. Is that how it is with Tucker? Hope teases. You really want to know how I feel about it? I exhale a long, heavy breath, deciding to be honest with my friends and with myself. I feel silly and weak, and I don't like it. I should be immune to this. I mean, he's just a guy. I've slept with lots of guys before, and I'm sure there'll be many in the future. So why am I all weak-kneed and fluttery around this one? Why is feeling something for someone a weakness? Hope chastises. I know you don't think I'm weak. God, no, but you're rich and gorgeous and smart, and I have to work my ass off for everything. Frustrated, I dig the knuckle of my thumb into my temple. You're more together than I am. I always feel like I'm one day away from disaster. The other night I had a dream that Professor Fromm walked into Boots and Shoots while I was on stage wearing nothing but glitter and a G-string. I woke up in a panic because I was fucking convinced there'd be an email on my computer informing me that my admission to Harvard was being rescinded. In front of me, Hope shakes her braids. Honey, you said it yourself. Your schedule is terrible. The reason you're so stressed out is because you only give yourself an hour or two a week to just relax. She's right, Karen says. And look, I think it's awesome that you meet up with us once a week, but at this rate, you're going to flame out before you even get to Harvard. That's what your dream is telling you. Breyer's full of super students. Law school isn't going to be more competitive than what you've already faced. Hope fixes me with a stern look in the mirror. Slow down, B. Or at least slow down while you still can. You don't have to marry the guy, Karen chimes in. Going on a date or having great sex isn't a commitment. He's a student too, which means he has to study. He plays hockey, which means he's got practices and games. If you're going to date anyone, it should be someone who's got his own busy life, right? Hope raises one eyebrow. He's got a game tonight. I gape at her. Are you stalking him? How do you know he has a game? I looked up the team schedule on the Breyer site. Karen nods enthusiastically. Who are you guys and where are my friends? I demand. You don't even like hockey. I like it, Karen protests. My dad throws a Stanley Cup party every year. I turn to Hope, who shrugs. I neither like nor dislike it, and I have nothing against going to a game if it means watching my bestie finally have some fun. Come on, Karen urges. We don't have to stay for the whole thing. We'll watch a bit of the game, and maybe afterward you can go up to Tucker and tell him how awesome he played and how sexy he looks in his uniform. In fact, she waves a hand out the window. Here we are! This is where we're eating dinner. I stare at Breyer's multi-million-dollar hockey facility and all of the students streaming inside. Karen grins. Yep, love a good hot dog, don't you? DeAndre's meeting us inside, Hope adds. I sigh. So he was in on this diabolical plan of yours, too? Of course, he's my partner in crime. Hope kills the engine and she and Karen unbuckle their seatbelts. All right, let's do this shit. Time's a-wastin', B. I peer at the arena again, feeling oddly nervous. I don't know about this. Aw, come on, Karen coaxes. This place is full of your favorite things, athletes. I stick my tongue out at her, but she merely laughs. Hey, if you don't want Tuck, then I'll see if I can check Beard off my bucket list. She blinks innocently. I mean, if you're really not into this hot-built guy who gave you the best sex of your life, then you should totally be on board with me and Tuck hooking it up. The image of Karen's petite body underneath Tucker's big frame roils my stomach. It's Tucker, not Tuck. I flush when I hear the stiffness in my own voice. Hope dissolves into a fit of giggles. God, if you could see the angry look on your face right now. Karen giggles. Honey, you've got it bad. Hope produces a flask from her purse. If the game's terrible, we'll just get super drunk while we watch a bunch of white boys skate around with knives on their feet. Her description of what she thinks hockey is makes me and Karen burst out in laughter. And as my friends hop out of the car, I find myself getting out and following them to the entrance of the arena. They're right about a lot of things. I do need a break, and maybe, just maybe, I need Tucker. I don't watch a lot of sports. Not because I don't like them, but because I've never had time to get into one. I know a little bit about football because of Bo, and some baseball because that's all Ray watches in the spring. Hockey, not so much. But I have to admit, watching Breyer's team play is more exciting than I thought it would be. I'm squished between Hope and Karen, with DeAndre sitting on Hope's other side. I don't know if we have good seats or not. Karen says yes, but I would have preferred to be sitting right behind the home bench so I could stare at Tucker all night. Instead, I have to satisfy myself by watching him on the ice. Hope told me that his jersey number is 46. I guess she found that out on the school website, too. So I glue my eyes to the black and silver jersey that reads number 46, marveling at the way he confidently wields his stick. I don't think I could ever hold on to a hockey stick while I was wearing those bulky boxing gloves. When I mention this to my friends, DeAndre laughs his ass off. Those are hockey gloves, baby girl, not boxing gloves. Oh, I feel stupid now. In my defense, I've never been to a hockey game before, so why should I be expected to know what the equipment is called? I know there are sticks and pucks and nets. I know some players are forwards, because that's what Tucker told me he was, and I know other players are defensemen, because that's what Bo told me Dean was. Other than that, I'm completely ignorant about this game. There was no reason to ever study up on it since hockey players have been on my hell no list. So have boyfriends, for that matter. Arrgh! I can't believe I let my friends talk me into this. I don't have time for a boyfriend, and even if I did, Tucker isn't the guy. He's too nice and sweet and amazing. That trickle of shame I felt when Ray interrupted us having sex still flutters through me every time I think about it. It was so humiliating. And even though Tucker assured me that it didn't make him think any less of me, a part of me thinks less of me. I hate where I come from. I hate Ray. Sometimes I even hate my own mother. I know I'm supposed to love her because she gave birth to me, but the woman abandoned me. She just left. You got this, boys! An enthusiastic fan shouts, jerking me out of my bleak thoughts. I glance at the ice to see Tucker skating again. The night we met, he'd admitted that he was slow because of an old knee injury, but holy hell, he doesn't look slow. He's a blur of motion, getting from one end of the ice to the other before I can even blink. His teammates are equally fast, and I can barely keep up with the puck. I thought Tucker had it, but then the crowd roars with disappointment, and I swivel my head to see the black disc bounce off one of the net posts. I guess someone else had it, but Tucker scoops up the rebound. He passes to one of his teammates. When the guy slaps it right back to Tuck, I find myself bolting to my feet so I can get a better view of him taking a shot. He misses. I groan in frustration. Karen laughs as I flop back down in my seat, but she doesn't make fun of me for my sudden burst of fangirldom. The game remains scoreless all the way into the third period. I can't believe we've already watched 30 minutes of hockey and no one has scored yet. You'd think I'd find it boring, but I'm on the edge of my seat, wondering which team will draw first blood. It's Breyer. As the lamp over the net lights up, a rock anthem blasts over the PA system and the home crowd screams in celebration. The announcer calls the goal for someone named Mike Hollis and the assist for John Tucker. I jump to my feet again, cheering loudly. This time my friends do say something. She's got it bad, DeAndre remarks. Told you so, Hope says to her boyfriend. What? I mutter defensively. That was a very nice scoring maneuver. Karen doubles over. Scoring maneuver? She echoes between giggles. Jeez, B, get with the program. It's called a goal. You're called a goal, I retort childishly. DeAndre snickers.
Good one.
I sit down and watch the fast-paced game with bated breath. To my relief, Briar holds the other team off, and we win 1-0 when the final buzzer goes off. Everyone is in good spirits as they shuffle out of the arena, myself included. I'm happy I came tonight, and as unsure as I am about whether to get involved with Tucker, I can't deny I'm excited to see him and give him a hug and tell him what a great game he played. He'll hug me back, thank me. Maybe he'll suggest we get in that truck of his for some celebratory sexy times. If he does that, I honestly don't think I would say no this time. Apparently all the bunnies hang out outside the locker rooms, Karen whispers to me as we file into the main lobby. So let's wait for him outside. It'll be less crowded. The bunnies? Puck bunnies. Hockey groupies, whatever you call them. She shrugs. You know, the chicks looking to get nasty with a hockey player. Ah, gotcha. I shrug back because I have nothing against girls who want that. After all, my own requirement for hookups is athletes only. But when the athlete I'm waiting for finally emerges from the building, he's not alone. My spine stiffens as I watch Tucker pause on the steps with his arms slung around a short blonde. He's in his hockey jacket and she's bundled up in a bright red parka. But the way my stomach twists up with jealousy, you'd think they were buck naked and brazenly fucking on the stairs. Let's go, I hiss to my friends. A firm hand circles my wrist. They're just talking, Hope says quietly. My cheeks hollow as I grind my teeth. He has his arm around her. I am not about to make a fool of myself over some hockey player, especially one who says how much he wants to go out with me and then comes out for a post-game celebration with his arm around some other girl. I sneak another peek. Yep, arm's still around her, and he's laughing at whatever Blondie's saying. My molars are being crushed to dust, but I can't seem to look away. Blondie wraps both arms around Tucker's waist and gives him a tight hug. She tips her head up at him. He smiles down at her. And then my heart is shredded to pieces because Tucker's head is dipping towards hers. His mouth drops lower and lower and lower until finally he kisses her. Chapter 13. Sabrina. On the forehead. Tucker kisses Blondie on the forehead, and then ruffles her hair as if she's a toddler. Damn, she got the forehead kiss, DeAndre murmurs. That's rough. Whatever, it was still a kiss, and I don't even want to know who this chick is anymore. I feel stupid for coming tonight. Tucker is Mr. Popular with his swarm of admirers and impeccable manners and that reddish hair that makes him look like he belongs in some old-timey family sitcom where life is perfect, perfect, perfect. I'm the overachiever, the bitch who studies her ass off and works every second of every day to try to climb out of the gutter she was born in so she can stand next to all these Briar kids without feeling inferior. Let's go, I repeat. My friends must realize how serious I am because they all take a step forward. We're about 2 feet from the base of the steps when I hear my name. Sabrina. Crap, I've been spotted. Wait up. His voice sounds closer now. I turn to Karen in a silent plea for help, but she simply grins. When I turn to Hope and DeAndre, they're pretending to be studying their phones, traitors. Sighing, I swing around and meet Tucker halfway. He's visibly thrilled to see me, his eyes bright and his sexy mouth curved in a smile.
What are you doing here?
I say the first lame thing that comes to mind. I was in the neighborhood.
You were you?
His smile widens.
And did you happen to catch any of the game while you were in the neighborhood?
All of it, actually. That was a nice assist.
I thought you didn't know anything about hockey.
I don't. I'm just repeating what the announcer said on the PA.
Tuck!
Someone from the group of players calls.
You coming?
He twists around to shout back,
I'll meet you there.
Then he's smiling at me again.
Want to come back to my place to celebrate the win with us?
I shake my head. I have to get home. I work tomorrow. Besides, don't say it. I don't particularly feel like, don't fucking say it, Sabrina, being a third wheel. I finish and want to punch myself for it. His dark auburn eyebrows shoot up.
What are you talking about?
I clench my teeth.
Darling,
he prompts. Little Red Riding Hood over there, I mumble, jerking my head toward Blondie, who's now chatting with one of Tucker's friends. You two looked like you were on a date.
A date? No.
He starts to laugh.
That's Sheena, a friend of mine.
He pauses.
Well, an ex.
I pounce on that. See?
See what? She's an ex, but she's also a friend. I'm friends with lots of my exes.
Of course he is. No girl on this damn planet would ever carry Underwood this guy and key his truck or bash it in with a baseball bat. He's too fucking nice. It's impossible to hate him.
You're jealous,
he teases. No, I lie.
You totally are.
Delight dances across his face.
You like me.
No, I lie again. I told you I was in the neighborhood. I figured I'd say hello.
You're better than this, baby.
Why don't you put us out of our misery and say yes already?
Yes to what?
A date. Just say yes.
My mouth opens to form words. Or rather, one word. Yes. I want to say it. I really, really do, but I hate being put on the spot. I can feel my friend's amused gazes on us, and now some of his friends are glancing over, too. And Tucker is too good and sweet, and I'm trashy and aloof, and my stepfather is a total creep, and it's all too fucking overwhelming right now. So when I finally answer, it's not what the word he wants to hear. Your friends are waiting for you, I mutter, and then I hurry back to my crew before he can object. Karen takes one look at my face and steers me toward the parking lot where DeAndre parked his car. Ugh! I groan when we're out of Tucker's sight. I'm so freaking stupid!
You're not stupid,
Hope objects. If anything, you're too smart, Karen says. Your brain is your biggest enemy.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means you think too much. We all saw your face just now. You like this guy. You really like him.
He scares me, I blurt out.
Three sets of eyes blink in surprise. He's too perfect, you guys, I groan again, and I'm a total mess most of the time. I'm scared that if he gets to know me better, he'll see that.
So what if he does?
Hope counters. My teeth dig into my bottom lip. Karen touches my arm. You need to go out with him. Seriously, Sabrina, you'll regret it if you don't. And the one thing I know you hate is regrets.
She's right. I always kick myself after I let an opportunity pass me by.
Tell you what, she says when I hesitate for too long. Let's make it a double date.
A double date? I echo weakly.
Ooh, threesome.
Hope waggles her brows. Kinky.
Calm your tits, Hopeless. Karen orders. I'm talking normal, wholesome, double date.
I think it over. It does take a lot of the pressure off.
Okay, I can do that.
Karen beams.
Good. Now text him before you change your mind. Oh, and whoever you pair me up with better be hot. And make sure he knows how to use his tongue.
I'm standing right here, you know.
DeAndre waves one meaty hand in the air.
How about you pervs quit objectifying my man clan?
Hope giggles. Who's objectifying? Karen replies. I'm just saying I want a guy who's good with his tongue. That should be the prerequisite for every member of your man clan, Dee. Like in middle school, they should teach reading, writing, and really good tongue movement.
Girl, I think you can get locked up for those thoughts,
he warns. Hope continues to giggle uncontrollably for another minute before gaining enough composure to reach over and squeeze my arm.
This'll be good for you.
If it crashes and burns, do I get to say I told you so?
I'll write it across my forehead in black magic marker for you,
she vows. As my friends head for Hope's car, I gather all the courage I can find and text Tucker before I talk myself out of it. If I say yes, it doesn't mean anything.
His answer is immediate.
Him.
It means he is.
Me. But I'm not committing to anything beyond this one date.
Him.
Kind of presumptuous, no? I only ask for one date.
I stare at my phone. Had I read this whole thing incorrectly? The guy talked about love at first sight, wanting to be married and have kids, and he only wants to see me one more time and fuck me?
Him.
Kidding, darling. I'm holding back the marriage proposal until the third date. When?
Me. I'm bringing my friend Karen, and you need to bring the hottest guy you know.
Him.
I'm the hottest guy I know. We'll look for second hottest guy on campus. She have any preferences?
Me.
Someone who knows how to use his tongue.
Him.
Again, that'd be me. Not sure how I'll find out how good the other guys are with their equipment. Not a topic that comes up a lot.
Me.
That's the price of my time.
Him.
On it.
There's a short delay, and then another message pops up.
Him.
You won't regret this.
I have the perfect date idea. Karen texts an hour later. It's 11, and I'm getting ready for bed because I have to be up at 4 to sort mail. The text is followed by a slightly blurry pic. I pinch and zoom until I manage to make out a few words.
Me.
Paint night out? I have no artistic skills. Even my stick figures look terrible. You know this. You mocked my hangman once.
Her.
That was not a hangman. That was... I mean, the arms should come out from the side of the body, not the neck. Anyway, this is easy. It's like a paint-by-numbers thing. We drink, paint, enjoy ourselves. If the date is crappy, then you and I can drink ourselves into oblivion.
Me.
Fine, when is it? I'm only available Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Her.
I know. It's why I picked this dummy. It's every other Sunday, as in tomorrow night.
How would I know? The picture she sent is small and blurry and could say it's a church group meeting on Saturday morning.
Me.
I'll see if T is available.
Her. Bet you he is.
I'm not taking that bet. Instead, I text Tucker.
Me.
You in for some paint by numbers?
The phone dings the message alert just as I'm pulling on my sleep shirt and boxers.
Him. Is that like Naked Twister?
Me. I have no clue. I send him the picture. Maybe he can make some sense out of it because I sure can't.
Him. Was this taken with an actual camera or drawn by tiny leprechauns?
Me. Karen's a scientist, not an artist. BTW, did you find someone?
Him.
Yes, my buddy Fitz is coming, and before you ask, I have no idea re his oral skills. But he's hella smart, has a mean slapshot, and I've never heard any complaints.
I take a screenshot of that text and send it to Karen.
Me.
Is this okay?
Her.
Can I have a pic?
I text Tuck. Can she have a pic?
Him.
Of what?
Dear God, this is a ridiculous game of actual telephone. Me. Tucker says, of what?
Her.
Face, abs, ass, no dick. I take yet another screenshot and shoot that off to Tucker. While he considers the request, I wash my face and brush my teeth. By the time I climb into bed, there's a message waiting for me. A picture of a gorgeous, dark-haired guy flipping Tucker off fills my screen. Wow. It's incredible how hot these Briar hockey players are. Is that a requirement of making the team? Be able to slap the puck 100 miles an hour and also star in the calendar? I forward the picture to Karen, who sends me a thumbs-up emoji in return. Then I text Tucker again.
Me.
We're good to go.
Him.
Time, place? Seriously, can't read this thing.
Me.
Tomorrow, 8 p.m., Karen says there's booze.
Him.
Okay.
I'm about to put my phone away when three dots appear and then disappear, and then reappear again. Finally, the message comes through.
Him.
Dick pics that bad?
I smother a giggle. That's his question?
Me. Why, are you going to send me one?
Him.
Feel like that may be a trick question. Do you want one?
Me. Depends on context. Random dick pics equals no. Otherwise, I don't know. I haven't gotten one that I've really liked.
You've sent one? Or several?
Him.
My thumbs are tired. Hold on.
The phone vibrates in my hand a second later. Hello, I answer.
Hey.
He pauses.
So what made you change your mind about the date? My friends said it would be good for me, I admit.
Your friends are right.
I can hear the smile in his voice.
Anyway, I feel like this is a conversation we should have in person so I can see your face. Eggplant emojis don't have enough nuance.
This makes me laugh. True.
But you're in Boston and I'm in Hastings, so we're going with the phone call. I may have sent a pic once, but it was solicited. She sent me one first.
Really? I'm not a fan of that. Too many revenge pics online. Besides, I never really hung around a guy long enough to want to send him a picture, but I don't share that with Tucker. So there are pics of Tucker's mighty Wang on the internet?
I haven't been tagged on Instagram yet, so I'm hopeful they aren't out there, but thanks for calling my dick mighty. We appreciate that.
Amusement colors his words. We? As in you and your penis?
Yep,
he says cheerfully. I snuggle deeper under the covers. You have a name for your penis?
Doesn't everyone? Guys put a name on everything that's important to them. Cars, dicks. One of my teammates in junior hockey named his stick, which was dumb because sticks break all the time. He'd gone through 12 of them by the end of the season.
What were the names?
That's the thing. He just kept adding a number to the end, like iPhone 6, iPhone 7. Except in his case, it was Henrietta 1, Henrietta 2, etc.
I snicker. He should have used the hurricane naming convention.
Darling, he wasn't smart enough to come up with two names, let alone 12.
Darling, my heart trips at the endearment. When he used it before, it seemed like a throwaway, but now, after he just said guys name things that are important to them, I quell my fantastical interpretations before they lead me to a dangerous end. We're flirting. Keep the tone light.
What's your dick's name?
Uh-uh, he scolds.
That's wife knowledge. I can't tell you until the honeymoon.
I wait for the inevitable sense of discomfort to start tickling my neck, but it doesn't come. Apparently the offhand jokes about marriage no longer bother me.
So what makes a good dick pic?
He asks.
Not that I'm sending you one.
Is that also wife knowledge? I tease.
I'd consider it engagement stuff.
I put that thought aside and consider his question. Completely graphic doesn't do it for me. I need context, like I said before. Your fist around it would be hot. You have good hands. There's a rustling sound, footsteps, and then a door latch clicking shut. He's gone somewhere private, and that knowledge makes certain parts of my body pulse excitedly.
I had to leave the living room. We've got people over, and you thinking about my dick is hot as fuck. I'm too hard to be in public.
My breasts feel so heavy that I'm finding it hard to breathe. As I shift underneath the blankets, I hear his breath catch.
What are you thinking about?
He murmurs. I drag in some air to fill my suddenly depleted lungs. I know where this is going. If I stay on the phone, we're going to end up turning each other on to the point that I'm going to have to masturbate once I'm done. Tucker remains silent, leaving the decision up to me. I dip my hand between my legs as if the pressure could make the ache go away, but the contact only intensifies my desire. My voice is hoarse when I start speaking. I'm fixated on you holding your dick, only now you're moving your hand, stroking yourself. When there's no immediate response, I blush, thinking I've gone too far for him, but his next words tell me he's right with me.
You're killing me.
I bite my lip and rub harder. I'm getting worked up, too.
That doesn't help because now I'm picturing you all flushed and needy. You wet, Sabrina?
My fingers slip across my pussy. Very.
Fuck. What would I be doing if I was there?
Licking me? I say instantly. He has a great tongue. On his end, there's more wrestling, and then a husky...
You need a toy?
Yeah, give me a sec. I fumble in my desk drawer and find the box of tampons where I hide stuff from Ray. Some cash rolled up in an empty tampon cartridge and my vibe. I fish the latter out and flick it on. Ready, I tell him as I place the quivering toy against my clit. My hips arch up and a small cry escapes me.
God damn,
he groans.
Slide it inside, slow and steady. It's my hand on that vibrator and my tongue is on your clit.
As he issues his commands and paints an erotic picture, I work the toy in and out. It's such a relief not to have to think, to give myself completely over to him. I don't say anything more. I can't, really. I'm too focused on listening, letting his southern drawl pour over me like warm syrup, listening to the hoarse, dirty instructions telling me to pump the vibe harder. Imagine him licking my pussy, telling me how gorgeous and sexy I am, and how he's never been harder in his life. I come as the sounds of him working his own flesh mix with my gasps of pleasure. His voice fills my world. "Night, darling," he says when my breathing slows. "Night," I manage, and then I fall asleep, deep and long and utterly satisfied. Chapter 14. Sabrina.
Naked painting?
Suspicion floats through me as I pull open the door to wine and brush. The sign cheekily displays a pair of art dolls arranged in a sordid embrace. Fitting for a college town wine bar, I guess.
"You took that blurry picture on purpose," I accuse my friend.
"Of course I did," Karen says smugly. "I didn't want you to have an excuse to say no." She strolls in and then stops about 2 steps from the threshold, her gaze glued to the bar across the room.
"Nice," she whistles under her breath. "You did good, Bee."
I grin. I'll happily take credit where none is due. We each snag a wine glass from a tray by the table before moving forward. Our dates are leaning against the bar, talking to each other. Even slouching, they're about a head taller than almost any other person in the room. I notice other girls eyeing their dates and then casting covetous glances toward Tucker and Fitzy. It's those glances that propel me across the room and onto my tiptoes to give Tucker a kiss on the lips. The corners of his sexy mouth curve up as if he knows exactly what I'm doing.
"Good to see you, darling. Sleep well last night?"
"I did, you?"
"Like a baby."
Karen doesn't miss a thing.
"Did you sleep in Boston last night?"
she teases. He shakes his head.
"Just heard a good story."
I use the wine glass to smother a smile while Tucker introduces our friends.
"Karen, this is Colin, but everyone calls him Fitzy."
"I like that better," she announces.
"Karen and Colin sounds too cutesy together." The 6-foot-plus guy smiles shyly and takes Karen's hand in his, carefully shaking it as if he's afraid he's going to hurt her. He doesn't have to worry, though. She's small but tough.
"Are you roommates?"
Karen asks, and she's not at all covert as she admires him from head to toe. I can't deny that I'm kinda doing the same thing. Fitzy is incredibly appealing. He's got messy dark hair that you just want to run your fingers through. And those tats, yum. He's wearing a t-shirt that reveals 2 full sleeves of intricate designs and a lot of fancy-type imagery. I make out several dragons and at least 1 sword, and there's ink peeking out of the collar of his shirt, too. Karen's not usually into tattooed guys, but her eyes are glued to this one.
"Nope, I live alone,"
Fitzy tells her.
"Tuck lives with the Glory Boys."
"The Glory Boys?" I echo, but I suspect I know the answer. Tucker's expression grows amused.
"Garrett and Logan are the stars. Both guys are going pro. And you know Dean."
I wrinkle my nose at the mention of his name.
"Don't get her started,"
Karen warns. Fitzy gives a lopsided grin.
"A girl who doesn't love Dean? I didn't know they existed."
"He got an A because he was sleeping with a TA, I grouse.
Karen places her hand over my mouth.
"I warned you. Come on, Fitzy."
She drops her hand and crooks her finger toward the big hockey player.
"Let's find a place to sit. I've heard this story before, and it's not a good one."
She hums a few bars from Frozen as she leads him away. I make a frustrated sound in the back of my throat, but since half my audience is gone, I turn to the only person who's left. "Are you going to tell me to let it go, too?"
"Nah, you hold on to that as long as you want. It's not my place to dictate what you get mad about."
He cups the back of my neck with 1 large palm and leans down to whisper in my ear.
"But I'll be happy to tell you what to do later on tonight."
My body tightens immediately. Sex with Tucker is about the least stressful, most enjoyable thing in my life, and as I lean into his solid grip, I realize I'm no longer interested in fighting the attraction between us. My friends are right. I do need this. Not only the sex, but the company. Hanging out with a smart, cute guy who wants nothing more than to be with me any way he can. I think I'm just going to roll with this and see what happens. It's a deal. He winks.
I've got ideas now.
As if you didn't have them before, I scoff.
I've got more ideas. You're very inspirational.
His hot gaze has me stepping forward and lifting my hand to his chest. His very ripped, very lickable, very gorgeous chest. Under my palm, his muscles flex and his heart beats quickly. I rise up on my tiptoes to... A loud cough behind us has me dropping down.
Yeah?
Tucker says to Fitzy without taking his eyes off mine.
You might want to grab a seat. Everyone's waiting on you.
I shift around to see that most of the room is turned in their chairs, either waiting for us to sit down or hoping we start mauling each other in front of them. The long tables are set up in a C shape, and there's a small riser in the center where I assume the model will stand. We each get our own easel, canvas, and an array of brushes and acrylic paints. It's pretty cool. Unless you're stripping and going to serve as our models, come and sit. Karen orders. Tucker's hand drifts downward, managing to raise 1,000 goosebumps on the way to my hand. I clasp it and lead him to the chairs next to Karen.
You're supposed to wait until after the date to jump his bones, she whispers as I sit down.
I set the wine glass aside and pick up a paintbrush. Rules are for suckers and boring people, careful. She runs a brush over my nose in mock disgust, but then the instructor starts speaking and we shut up out of habit.
Hey, everyone, I'm Aria, and I'll be your instructor for the night. I'm so pumped by the turnout.
Oh, boy. Our teacher is one big ball of energy, bouncing on her feet as she addresses the room. On her head is a crazy swirl of Medusa-like dreadlocks that swing around like snakes as she bounce talks.
First thing I'm going to do is introduce our model. This is Spectre.
Spectre? Tucker sways in his chair, and I turn to find him fighting waves of laughter. I plant a hand on his knee to still him.
Be nice, I hiss.
Trying to.
He chuckles while muttering Spectre to himself. A tall guy in a white bathrobe steps forward and waves at the group. His black hair is longer than mine, and he has those squinty James Franco eyes that make him look perpetually stoned.
Hi,
is all he says. Then he takes off the robe. I choke on a gasp because, oh my God, his penis is right there. And it's impressive. Beside me, Karen is also quick to examine the goods.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Well, hello there, Manaconda, she calls to the model before sweeping her gaze over the other females in attendance. Ladies, I think Spectre deserves a slow clap right now, no? Now I'm the one fighting laughter because damned if the ladies don't all break out in a slow, slow clap that leads to a burst of applause followed by whistles and catcalls. The shade of poor Spectre's face is so red it belongs on the palette in front of me. Tucker snorts loudly in the chair next to mine while Fitzy leans around Karen's and asks me,
Is she always like this?
Usually she's worse, I say cheerfully. He doesn't seem put off by that. Our instructor, meanwhile, is starting to get annoyed.
Guys!
She claps her hands together. Focus! There's beautiful art to be made. Her stern expression cracks, replaced with a grin.
Which, of course, will absolutely include Spectre's equipment.
This is the weirdest fucking date I've ever been on. Aria gives us a rundown of how it all works. It's not very complicated. We drink wine and paint Spectre's penis. Surprisingly, Tuck, Fitz, and the other men in the room are instantly on board. Paint tubes are opened, brushes are raised, and then we're making beautiful art. Sort of. I awkwardly drag my brush over the canvas. I tried to mix yellow, white, and brown to create a peachy skin tone for my canvas Spectre, but it looks like he has an awful spray tan. Tucker runs one of his dry brushes across a knuckle that's sporting a bruise.
I can think of a dozen good uses for one of these. Might take it home.
I roll my eyes. Paintbrushes aren't sex toys.
Says who?
We work steadily for the next hour. Karen is awesome at this. So is Fitzy, who, according to Tuck, designs his own video games.
Tucker is surprisingly decent, though he seems to be avoiding the dick region on his canvas. You're gonna have to paint his junk eventually, I taunt. He winks. I'm saving the best for last. From the other section of the tables, a guy with floppy blonde hair and a Red Sox t-shirt raises his hand. Teach, I can't do the pubes. They look like little ants. A burst of laughter roars through the room. I think Red Sox is on a double date, too, because he and his date are sitting next to another couple who are in hysterics.
Seriously, Speck?
Red Sox's friend calls out. You couldn't have done a little manscaping before you came here tonight?
Can't, Spectre replies from his perch, sounding bored. My contract doesn't allow it.
He has a contract? To pose naked at a college bar paint night? The pubic hair adds texture to the painting, Aria explains to the group. But art is about interpretation, remember? Paint what you see in here. She taps a hand over her heart. Not what you see here. She points to her eyes. What the hell does that even mean? I whisper to Tucker, whose entire face is flushed from laughing so hard. Like this, Aria declares suddenly. This is interpretation. I glance over to find her swiping Fitzy's canvas off his easel. The big guy rumbles in protest, but she ignores him and holds up the painting with a grand flourish. My jaw drops when I see what Tucker's friend has painted. It's Spectre, but a badass version of him in a helmet and wielding a shield. Instead of the much-talked-about penis, Fitzy painted an elaborate-looking sword jutting from the guy's crotch, like a sword worthy of Game of Thrones.
Dude,
Tucker exclaims, suitably impressed. That's amazing, a wide-eyed Karen gushes to her date. He shrugs.
It's all right.
His modesty makes me smile. I only grin harder when Aria gives him back the canvas and then begs him to leave it with her instead of taking it home with him. We resume our painting, cracking jokes and sipping our wine. Every so often, Tucker leans toward the elderly gentleman beside him and helps the poor guy out.
Nah, man, you want a shade under here, he advises. Imagine that the light is hitting his arm from up there, so the shadow would be down here.
The old man harumphs loudly.
This whole thing is a waste of time.
Hiram, his wife scolds.
What? It's true,
he says in a crabby voice, then gives Tucker and me a surly look.
This was her idea.
Because I thought you would enjoy it, the gray-haired woman protests. You've always told me how much you envy my artistic skills. The couple appears to be in their late 60s. Or hell, maybe their late 70s. I've never been a good judge of age. Besides, seniors look so young these days. Nana could pass for my older sister.
Gee, I'm sorry, Doris, but I never learned how to draw naked folks when I was getting shot at and numb.
Doris slams her brush on the table. We talked about this.
Dr. Phillips said you weren't allowed to discuss Vietnam anymore. It's destructive to our relationship. It was the most taxing time of my life, he says stubbornly.
And you think it was easy for me? She challenges. Being at home and raising two children in diapers while you were off hunting Charlie? He squawks in outrage.
You were wiping bottoms. I was killing human beings.
I bite my lip to stop from laughing, even though this isn't a particularly funny conversation. Maybe the wine has gone to my head.
Now,
Tucker drawls.
Hiram, my man, your wife is gorgeous and obviously devoted to you. And Doris, Hiram here fought for his country to keep you and your children safe. Think of how much he must love you for him to have done that. So let's not fight, huh? Why don't we just focus on painting this nice fellow over there and doing justice to his equipment?
Fitzy snorts from the other side of Karen. So does Hiram, whose voice becomes gruff as he addresses his wife.
I'm sorry, Dory. You're right, this was a lovely idea.
And you were very brave in the war, she says magnanimously. Hiram leans over and pats Tucker on the shoulder.
All right, show me that shadow trick.
My heart melts as I watch Tucker help the older man. Doris, meanwhile, is blushing prettily, probably thinking about how he called her gorgeous before.
Like you, kid,
Hiram tells my date. Yeah, I like him too.
Tucker. We're all feeling stupid and giddy when we troop out of the bar with our wrapped-up canvases tucked under our arms.
Well, except for Fitzy. Our instructor made him leave his masterpiece behind so she could show it to future classes. Outside, the air is frigid, but that doesn't stop Hiram from saying, "I saw an ice cream parlor down the road. Let's check if it's still open." And yep, our double date has turned into a triple date, and suddenly we're going out for ice cream with an old war vet and his sweet as molasses wife. I hold Sabrina's hand as we amble down the sidewalk. I honestly didn't expect to have this much fun tonight. I mean, a painting class? There are a million dirtier things I would have rather done. But this wasn't bad at all. Even Fitzy has laughed more times tonight than I've ever heard in the past. The ice cream place is just closing when we arrive, but the kid who's about to lock the door takes pity on us and opens the cash register. Thanking him profusely, we order waffle cones and then head back to the bar parking lot. Now that they're no longer bickering, Hiram and Doris regale us with stories about their 46 years together. They've lived through some pretty harrowing times, but I'm more interested in the happy memories they describe. 46 years. It's fucking surreal to think of being with someone for that long. Am I totally nuts for wanting that? Sabrina seems equally mesmerized by their tales, and when the elderly couple climbs into their little car and drives off, she seems genuinely disappointed to see them go. "We're going to finish our ice cream in my car," Karen announces, and there's nothing stealthy about the way she says it. With a mischievous smile, she tugs on Fitzy's hand and drags him toward the blue hatchback parked across the lot. He glances over his shoulder and grins at me. "They're totally going to hook up," Sabrina says.
"Yep."
I drag her toward my own vehicle. Once we're settled in the front seat, I flick the ignition and blast the heat. Ice cream was probably a bad idea. Sabrina is visibly shivering as we wait for the truck to warm up.
"So," I say.
"So, that was entertaining." "Which part? When the Red Sox guy painted ants for pubes? Or when Hiram and Doris described what it was like to live through the boob job craze in the 80s?
"Holy fuck. When she said she'd considered getting her bosom done?
Oh my god, I died." Sabrina is in stitches beside me, the sound of her high-pitched giggles bringing a rush of warmth to my chest.
Damn, I really like this girl. She's incredible. She's not the ice queen Dean insists that she is, not in the slightest. She's smart and funny and caring, and I might be falling for her. My laughter dies off.
"What's wrong?" Sabrina asks immediately.
"Nothing," I lie. It's either that or tell her what I'm thinking about, and I'm pretty sure she doesn't want to hear it. I don't even want to imagine what her response would be if I admitted that I'm falling for her. We've fucked twice and gone on one date. It's way too early to bring the L word into the conversation.
"You sure?" She sounds concerned. "You got a really deep crease right here." She smooths two fingers over my forehead.
"Nah, I'm good." I shift in my seat and ease closer to her. "I'm having a great time."
"Me too."
Her bottom lip pokes out a bit.
"I wish..."
"You wish what?"
She sighs. "I wish we could go back to my place, but I've got to be up at 4 a.m. This isn't a good night for me to be up late."
"Same. I've got practice at 7.
"So, no sex," she says glumly.
"Not unless you want..."